Turning Point Coaching and Consulting presents Kairos Conversations, Connecting with Quality, the podcast. Kairos is Greek for the right time, the right season, the right opportunity. This podcast features healthcare quality professionals who share their journeys, their advice, their struggles, how they made that transition into a new and exciting role. My heart's desire is that you find this podcast to be inspirational to you as you make your own journey. Don't forget to share this podcast with your colleagues and friends and rate us on whichever podcast platform you listen to. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the podcast. Today, I am joined by my new guest, Elizabeth Batchelor. Thank you for joining me today, Elizabeth.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited.
Awesome. I want to start by telling the audience that it was so important for me to have Elizabeth, or I call her Liz, on today's podcast because I wanted her to share her journey from the patient's perspective. A lot of what you've heard on the podcast so far has been healthcare professionals or people who have transitioned into making healthcare safer. But we don't always hear the story of someone who's gone through this healthcare system. And so I'm so excited to talk to Liz today. Will you start by introducing yourself to the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Liz. I am a single mom of two boys. I am an educator and healthcare advocate because I survived stage 3 rectal cancer, diagnosed at 33 years old. So sort of a rarity, but unfortunately becoming more common.
Yeah. And can you share how you were diagnosed, how you found out, to the detail that you want to go into?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty open with my journey because I feel it's really important, especially for younger people. I was having some problems on and off from probably even in my 20s, but my parents both had some stomach issues. My mom had, I forget exactly what, but my dad has IBS. So during COVID, my symptoms kind of increased, and it was never anything that was consistently. It was, you know, on and off. Sometimes I was fine for a couple months, sometimes a couple days, and then bad for a couple months, or, you know, there's no consistent pattern. And this was the time when everyone was in lockdown, and I was terrified to go to the provider, terrified to go to the ER, anything. And, you know, I called my dad and kind of talked with him about what he did for IBS and just figured it was the stress and that. And I took some changes to my diet and I took a Metamucil and things sort of got better. And then I went to the doctor, had my blood work done. Everything looked fine. He's like, you know, this is working. Keep at it. Probably just like your dad. If it gets worse, go to the gastro. And I was dating someone at the time. And if you're having stomach problems and you're dating someone, it's probably not the most romantic thing in the world. And so I was like, all right, well, COVID's kind of died down. Let me go ahead and go in. So I went in and they determined the fastest, easiest route would be to really determine what it was to do a colonoscopy, which I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm 33 years old. Like, that's something old people do. All right, whatever, fine. And I had to save up for it because one of the difficulties and barriers I faced was just the cost of it. When you're under age 45, they don't cover them as preventative. And I had to pay up front out of pocket because my particular insurance has a high deductible, even though it's the best plan that was offered by my employer. It was a $2,000 deductible. So I had to come up with, I think, like $1,000 up front and everyone else I could put on payments, which I ended up figuring out and did. And I very distinctly remember them being like, oh, you're only going to be under 15 minutes, maybe 30 if we have to biopsy anything. And I was like, oh, well, you know, what do you think this is? And I'm like, oh, it's either IBS or maybe ulcerative colitis. And I was like, well, you don't think it's like anything serious like cancer or anything? Oh, no, your labs are great. You're young. And I remember waking up and looking at the time and realizing it had been about an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. And I realized really quickly something was wrong. And then the doctor saw that I had woken up and like came over with pictures. And I was like, oh no, something's definitely wrong. And it was like a slow motion movie where I heard the words cancer, get an oncologist, don't wait, you know, but there was, he was talking for me like 15 minutes probably. And I don't remember everything he said. So it was just a calamity of errors that delayed everything. And ultimately almost cost me my life, because when they staged it, it was stage 3B.
Wow.
Yep.
So what was the time frame between the time that you had the colonoscopy and when you were actually diagnosed? Was there a gap there?
Luckily for me, my dad has a few contacts. He's a chiropractor, so he was able to ask around who in Florida would be the best. We were told where to go. My cousins happened to know the head of that department. So it was a lot quicker because there were a lot of favors called in. And so I was diagnosed, or rather the colonoscopy was done in January. And by Valentine's Day, because I actually went in, I think, on Valentine's Day, if I remember correctly, I was getting my last scan to confirm exactly what the staging was. So not too much of a delay, but I do remember they said normally to get into this physician, it would have been about a 6-month wait.
Wow, which would have, I mean, like you said, it could have cost you your life if you had had to wait that long to get into this particular specialist.
Yeah. Yeah, he flat out told me if we had waited that long that it would have been too late.
Wow. So how did you navigate the complexities of the healthcare system as a patient? Because I know that there are lots of appointments to go to, and you have chemo and potentially radiation and all the other things that come with such a complicated diagnosis. How did you navigate all of that?
Well, I added in, of course, that I chose the best, which was like 2.5 hours away from me. So that wasn't easy at all. Finding childcare was particularly hard. And that's not something that a lot of rectal cancer patients have. I'm very young for this. So at first they had a nurse navigator, which was really great to help me navigate the initial appointments. Once I got into having multiple providers and multiple departments, that's where it was really, really tricky and really overwhelming. My dad was not able to help me for most of it because he was, we had actually lost his sister, my aunt, 2 weeks before I was diagnosed to a different type of cancer.
Wow.
He just wasn't mentally or emotionally or even physically available. He was having all sorts of heart problems from everything. So I was really alone in it. Luckily, since I had grown up in his office and, you know, kind of in the medical field, and I had worked for about 10 years for a durable medical equipment supplier, I was pretty familiar with being able to find the right people to get me where I needed to go. So there was a massive system that I was within, and I quickly found that nobody talked to each other. Even though they were all in the same system, I was constantly having to recap the conversations. And for me, all of this information, I was just hoping I got correct. I wrote a lot of it down, a lot of reminders in my phone. They did have an application, which really helped, but there were things that were dropped. There were things that were missed. So for me, I had to be my own advocate and really just fight for myself. And it was exhausting. And multiple times, I just thought it was going to be too much because I found I was almost acting as my own navigator at a time when I was physically, mentally, and emotionally not at my best. So it was very hard and hard on my kids.
Yeah, I'm sure. And we were talking a little bit offline, and I want to bring this into the conversation. But as a healthcare provider, you know, we often educate our patients and tell them all the things that we know or we think that they should do based off their diagnosis and what we think will help. But we don't always recognize how that affects the patient. And for example, you were talking about, you know, a number of medications you had to take every day, mm-hmm. right? So we could say, oh, this person's being non-compliant or they're not listening to medical advice, not realizing the complexities of having to take however many pills, however many times a day.
Yeah. It was 3 times a day, multiple different pills, because it was also different start times, because it was, you would go in 1 week, get your chemo infusion. And I had 4 rounds of chemo, 25 rounds of radiation, surgery that they removed the affected area. They gave me a temporary ileostomy, put another 4 rounds of chemo, then reversed it all. So it was quite a regimen, but you would go in for the chemo. It would be 1 week. You'd start with the infusion, then you take home your pills. You would take your pills instead of having a pump. And that would be for the next 2 weeks, but that was 3 times a day. Then all of the side effects from all of that had all other pills, and then pills to help the side effects from the other pills. Then there was a week that it was all off, but then you started all back up again. So it was very overwhelming, and trying to, even with like technology that I'm able to utilize as a fairly young patient, you know, I had applications to remember my pills and to mark them off, but the effects of the chemo, I had some bad fog and memory loss, plus just being pulled in multiple different directions. You know, one moment I'm a patient, the next moment I'm a teacher, the next moment I'm mom, sometimes I'm all at once. And trying to be compliant was very difficult. And I did get pretty upset with one of my providers when he didn't mean it the way it came out, but he said that I was being a difficult patient, and I just burst out crying because I'm trying to do everything all at once. And it felt in that moment that somehow it wasn't enough. And
oh my gosh, I can't believe they said that to you.
Yeah. Well, he meant because of like the difficult in terms of the scheduling and, you know, and I was pretty firm. I'm like, I have to work. If I don't work, I will lose my home. I won't be able to take care of my children. My children won't be, you know, I'll lose custody of them. And, you know, if that all happens, then what the heck am I fighting for? So, yeah. You know, and he just meant something like that. So I had to have where chemo could only be done on Fridays, and I would drag myself in Monday morning to my job. And then all of these scans could only be on Saturdays because that's the only time I could get there and fast. And, you know, it made it difficult. It did make it difficult, but there's definitely some better words that could have been used at the time.
No, I'm glad you mentioned that, Liz, because I was just thinking about this not long ago, about how in some of the healthcare specialties, the office hours are really not convenient to all the different things that patients might need. And the fact that you had, you needed to get whatever you needed to get done on a Saturday, and that was able to accommodate it, man.
Sometimes, you know, I look back and I truly don't know how I did it. Like, I'm like, how did I fit that in? But you know, I, again, being 2 hours away didn't help. And, you know, they closed at 4 and I worked until 2:30. So I might be able to get there, but not in time for the scans. And I had to make special arrangements for when I did the radiation, because that was Monday through Friday, every single day, I'd have to go down for 5 weeks. So
2.5 hours away.
They were able to get me in like a satellite office, which was actually about like an hour and some odd. So I would got special permission to get there early to work so I could leave early, so I could jump in the car, so I could race down, hope there wasn't an accident every single day. And, you know, that was another 3 some odd hours of driving a day, and still tired. And I never saw my kids because luckily I had a friend that helped me for the most part that kept them. So I'd race back, grab the kids, give them food, put them, you know, help them with their homework. Then it was time for bed. And, you know, it was very stressful time. And then, you know, trying to keep all of your appointments. And I definitely missed a few that they would call and they're like, hey, just calling to remind you. I'm like, oh, sorry about that.
Yeah. And, you know, I chuckle now, but I'm at the time, I'm sure it was not, I mean, you were stressed out.
Yeah. And I also had like the bright idea of like my youngest son was starting travel football because it would be really good for him to have friends during this. And I did not know what that fully entailed, which was every single day he was at either a game or a practice. And so I would drag myself there, usually with just a chair that I kind of fell asleep in. And he'd wake me up when it was time to go, and I'd drive him back home. but, you know, trying to manage being a person, a mom, in addition to the patient, and constantly being told, oh, you know, being a mom first is important. And, and then, you know, you have to take time for yourself to be a patient, but very rarely did they take consideration into who I was or how to be a person during it. So it was definitely almost like an out of body experience, because I was not a person at all. That was not anything that anyone referred to me as.
Can you elaborate on that more? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so there wasn't any thought about how everything affected me as a person and what would be beneficial to my emotional and mental health. It was definitely a side piece. The provider that I had, even though it was a giant healthcare system, all of their mental health therapists were fully booked. They had no one available for me to even talk to.
Wow.
So I received no support in regards to that. And when I would try to stand up for myself about, well, this doesn't work for me as a person, I would get those responses about like being a difficult patient. And that was always the forefront on the provider's mind, was to save my life, which I understood and am incredibly grateful for. But some of the after effects were things that I am experiencing now, were things I very clearly had expressed I did not want to go through, and would have preferred to just make my life comfortable for a while I could. And so I definitely feel like my informed consent was not fully given, because there was definitely things that happened that no one discussed with me as a possibility. For example, I had expressed I did not want to have an ileostomy of any kind. And of course, then they said, oh, no, you have to. This is how it heals. Okay, well, what long-term? Is there going to be long-term effects? And oh, no, very rarely, very few. You know, every once in a while, you might have some incontinence, but not at all, not hardly at all. And then the reality is that it has been very difficult in that arena. And when I mentioned it, he's like, oh, well, I told you. I was like, no. You very specifically told me, because I asked you, what do you mean by a little while? You told me every once in a while, you might have something if you sneeze. That's not what the situation was. And I ended up having to undergo multiple other surgeries to fix the issues that surgery had caused, which was never something that was discussed with me. And I'm still left without full control, which is something I very specifically had told them that I didn't want to have happen, because I am still a young person. I'm single, you know, I had hopes to maybe one day add on to my family. And that's just realistically not ever going to happen. So for me, the person side of things, me and my hopes and my dreams for the future and my own personal autonomy, bodily autonomy, were not fully considered. All that was in their mind was saving my life. And it was definitely not the quality of my life, which was what I was concerned with.
And that's a great point to make, because it's not just about the length of life, but how you enjoy your life and the things that you want to do with your life.
Yeah. And, you know, again, me as a young person is very different from someone who's 60 having this. You know, I have potentially another 30 to 50 years of my life living with the consequences of someone else's choice, because it's definitely not mine. It's not like I'm, you know, 60 or 80 years old. I've lived my life and now I'm just, you know, stuck around the house because that's all that I can do. You know, I do want to travel. I do want to do these things. And I've found ways to do some of it, but it is much harder. And it's just completely different. So they didn't consider who the patient was as a person.
Wow. So were there other things that you experienced within the healthcare system that you would consider a flaw of the system, or that just didn't work well for you as a patient or as a person?
Yeah. I mean, we touched on obviously the timing being very difficult. You know, doctor's office hours don't really correspond with working people. I ran out of paid time off. I had to have other people donate time to me. I was still learning about the ileostomy. And that's another thing I'd asked about. I was like, I don't want to have any leaks or anything like that. And he told me, oh, that never happens. But they sent me home without even being able to themselves have a good seal. And I had to have other like wound ostomy care nurses who are the most amazing human beings on the face of this planet come. And it took a month to get a seal that would allow me to be confident. And yet I was still back at work. So, you know, not having paid time off is enough paid time off for this is an overall flaw, not just of the medical system, but of our healthcare and culture as a whole. But the lack of connection between the departments, it was very compartmentalized, over-specialized, really, in my opinion. No one talked to each other. If I had a doctor want me to have a scan, then I had to go and talk to that department, and that department had to schedule me, but that didn't necessarily correspond with the other thing he wanted me to do the same day, because I had to go and talk to them as well. And then they had to, you know, basically conference in with me if I got lucky and wasn't stuck between them. That was pretty hard. The lack of resources to provide to someone like myself, you know, there was nothing here in my area that the social workers could provide in terms of even getting a ride, because I live so far. I had to drive myself. I mean, I would go and do sigmoidoscopies awake because I needed someone to watch my children, and I couldn't get someone to watch my children and drive me. Wow. So they'd freak out. They're like, oh, you have to be put to sleep. And I was like, I don't know. My doctor said I didn't have to, so I'm not going to. Just a lot of barriers in general to the culture, but the system itself is just, it's definitely broken in terms of communication, in terms of thinking about the patient as a person. And I know that the doctors and staff are people too, but not having an ability for it to be outside of my working hours was very detrimental, because I had to choose between healthcare and my job multiple times.
Wow. Did you have a supportive leader at your job?
Oh, no. No, not at all. Like, it was very awkward, because there was the people that would go through and be like, oh, hey, how you doing? And they wanted me to say fine, you know, and if I said, oh, you know, great, or anything other than, oh, great, it was very awkward. And I had actually my two closest friends had, who were at work, had asked to send out an email from administration, just letting everyone know what was going on and asking, even, you know, if you have extra time and you would like to donate it, you can. They refused to even do that.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was great. I mean, they allowed me, like, oh, you know, your health comes first, but that was after I got my FMLA. So, I mean, then they had to, but it was not very supportive. I still had to do all of my tasks. There was never anything that was not written by a doctor, no accommodation on the, if it was not directly written there. And even after, I definitely experienced some pretty dehumanizing, things when I was having issues with my ileostomy leaking or with incontinence issues, trying to call to get someone to come and watch my class so I could take care of it multiple times. It was like 45 minutes waiting for someone.
Wow.
Yeah. So
you couldn't leave to...
Mm-mm. You had to have someone there legally to watch the kids.
Wow. Or they would have called it like job abandonment or something like that.
I could potentially face issues because I left the children alone. So it would be more than that.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was definitely a tough time. Made me reconsider a lot in life and what's important. So, you know, I don't like to harp on the bad times. I've really had an opportunity to look at what is important to me. I'm taking a lot of steps to to change things that don't suit me. I'm pretty brutal about that now. You know, yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, like, you know, I beat cancer. I'm not, I don't have time for that. So, you know, there's a silver lining. You know, I went to Puerto Rico last spring break. It was a very emotional trip. I was supposed to move there with the boyfriend that I was seeing that I mentioned before. And obviously that didn't work out through this, which is a whole nother thing you can talk about. But going there and just after everything, I still somehow made it there. It was a very, very beautiful trip. And healing in so many ways. So, you know, I'm still trying to make the best of it, still trying to live my dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you said that about trying to focus on the positive and what you can control and what you're not going to deal with anymore. Cause you're like, I've been through this. I'm not going to put up with this, anything else that's not serving me.
Mm-hmm. I want to pause for a moment to share something with you, my friend. After landing several non-clinical roles and coaching others to do the same, I have found that if you're running into roadblocks, making that pivot out of direct patient care, it's because of one of three reasons. One, you haven't quite figured out what you want to do yet, and that's okay. But take the time to dive deep to figure that out. Number two, your resume screams clinician. And number three, you haven't demonstrated value and impact in your current role. Regardless of which reason resonates most deeply with you, I'll share some resources to help in the show notes section of this podcast.
So what do you think would have made things better for you, or what would you recommend that our healthcare system do that would help the next person who goes through a similar situation?
Really, the communication being smoother internally between providers. There was no handoff. I again was always asked, and then it was like reliving, you know, every horrible thing was relived over and over and over again. And for example, one thing that really was difficult and overwhelming was, I don't know how, but somehow my oncologist's office nurse called in the chemo pills to the wrong pharmacy, meaning she called it into like a Publix rather than the correct mail order specialty pharmacy. And nobody caught it until literally the day before I was supposed to start chemo, which I had prepped myself for. It was really hard. And then the person was kind of just talking to me over the phone to prep me, the nurse, about the procedure, and I didn't even ask about it. And I was just like, hey, I do have a question. Where do I get these chemo pills from? Do I get them from you? Like, and then like, what are you talking about? You don't have them? And all hell broke loose.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't start my treatment until that worked out. So it delayed my treatment by a week, a start of treatment, which again, emotionally, mentally, I was prepared to start. I wasn't prepared to not start. Right. And then I had to jump through hoops and I had to call my insurance. And then, you know, the doctor's office nurse was blaming my insurance, but my insurance was like, no, no, no. The insurance and pharmacy were great. They had excellent customer care advocates that handled it for me. And they said, listen, we will take care of this. You get off the line. We will call you back. Relax. And they did. So for me, having some type of advocate that would do that for me with all of it, which I'm sure is a big ask, but consider how big of an ask it is to have a sick patient do that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's something that we don't always think about is all the different pieces. And this was a big hospital system that you are a part of. So it's not like it's a, you know, a small community hospital in a rural part of, you know, a state. Mm-hmm. This is a big, supposedly integrated hospital system. And I don't say that to call out that particular system because it happens in more than just whichever one you went to.
Yeah.
But just to say that there's more integration that we can do.
Yeah. I was surprised with how advanced they had their own, you know, app for, you know, their own actual app. I was like, I don't understand how I am having to do this. It was mind-boggling, and it was a quick wake-up call about it. And the provider actually, at one point, one of them had said, he's like, listen, because I was crying hysterically. I don't even remember why. And he was like, you know, you're going to have to do some of this alone, ultimately. Like, I can't do it for you. You're going to have to figure this out. And I was like, what? And again, he just meant it like in a, I'm going to have to deal with this mentally and emotionally and figure it out myself.
As a matter of fact.
Yes. Right. And, but again, the wording could have been better.
Yeah.
But it did help me though. Like, let me tell you, I mean, it was the punch in the face that I needed.
Yeah. So what was your defining point, Liz?
It really was that moment was, oh, okay. I will do it myself. And I stopped caring about anything other than getting better, which was really hard because there was so much else. But I became, from that point on, very almost cutthroat of my time.
Mm-hmm.
Standing up for myself. No, we will do this on a Saturday. You don't have the Saturday? Okay. We can do it on another Saturday, but you're going to have to tell Dr. So-and-so that you couldn't fit me in. You're going to have to make the communication, not me.
Wow. Good for you standing up for yourself.
So, I mean, I was not their favorite at all.
You didn't care about that. You cared about getting better and integrating it into your life. You were a single mom.
I had to figure it out. And I was like, fine, if you want me to have to do it myself, I'll do it myself then. And I think there isn't TikTok, fine, I'll do it myself. I think there's one of those. But it was literally like that in my mind. I'm like, fine, I will. So like I said, it was the exact thing I needed in that moment. And it was probably it was brutal to hear it. And it was surprising because it came from the doctor that was one of the most happy-go-lucky, supportive, and warm. So I think that's why it was so impactful. And he had built that trust up with me to be able to say something like that. And I stopped crying and was like, oh, okay.
It was just like a reality check. Okay, well, then let me do what I have to do to get through this.
Yeah, and I mean... It was like midway through and I was just so done. And he had a few talkings with me after that when I was like, well, I'm not going to do another round of chemo. And he got on the phone, took like an hour of just being like, you're being ridiculous. Like, you know, he's like, he begged me. He's like, I'm begging you for your life. And I'm like, I don't want to. You said I was done. He's like, I was wrong. I'm so sorry. Like, you know, yeah, but
yeah, the practice of medicine, right? It's an art.
Yeah. I mean, now I know. And I knew then. He called my dad, who he had permission to call. Like, it wasn't like I'd signed the form. He's like, you need to talk with her because she's going off the rails. But he was also the doc. He made that call himself to my dad.
Wow.
He was that doctor that would make those calls. So, you know, there were some shining lights even within that big system. And I was so mad because he left the system before I finished, because I'm there for, 5 years. And I was like, did he break up with me?
It does become a relationship like that.
Oh, it was really hard. Like, I felt like a family member had died. Like, I was not prepared. But that's a testament to him.
Yeah. I am just so grateful that you were willing to share this. You have been very raw and vulnerable, and I really appreciate it. Is there anything else that you want to share with the audience about your journey or anything?
I mean, I feel like we've gone pretty deep with the healthcare side, but maybe there's some patients out there that are looking and searching and know that you can do it. Anyone can find me on LinkedIn. I invite people to find me on LinkedIn. I'm not on Facebook in that way. But, you know, for me, I think being someone who is young, I felt very, very alone. I was always the youngest one in chemo. At some point, they had to put me in a room by myself because people kept staring. And even when you feel alone, there is someone somewhere in this world that does understand. And it might feel like no one does, but they do. And you can't be afraid to reach out for help and fight literally for your life, even if that means just finding someone that you can talk to. And for me, finding someone that I could talk to, my best friend, so a wonderful social worker in the hospital who I still call sometimes, and she does everything she can. You know, those few shining lights really will help make a difference. And then something that I think I should leave everyone with is actually that provider that I told you about. He's like, listen, I know right now it seems impossible and it seems like it will never get better. And it's fine to think that. But on the other side of this, I promise you, on the other side of this, you will laugh at some of these moments. And I was so mad. I was so mad. I was like, no, I'll never laugh. But I promise you, you will laugh again. And you will laugh at some of the things that happened, because everything after this will pale in comparison, and you'll find so much strength that you didn't know you had.
Wow. I have absolutely nothing to add to that. So everyone who's listening, I hope that this story has been inspiring to you. And I don't even want to call it a story. Let me call it Liz's journey. I hope it has been inspiring to you, because it has been inspiring to me. And
thank you.
I guess we will just end with those words, because I have nothing else to add. No. Thank you all for being here. And thank you, Liz, for sharing your journey.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. It would mean a lot if you would share this episode with a friend or a colleague. I would be honored to encourage them in their journey too.